Disc 1. Air power. HEIRPOWER. 8 Basic Habits of Exceptionally Powerful Lieutenants. By Bob Vasquez, Chief Master Sergeant, United States Air Force, retired. This book contains 69 pages on 3 CDs. Contents. Disclaimer. Page Roman numeral 2, Disc 1. Forward. Page Roman numeral 5, Disc 1. About the author. Page Roman numeral 7, Disc 1. Preface. Page Roman numeral 9, Disc 1. Acknowledgements. Page Roman numeral 11, Disc 1. Introduction. Page Roman numeral 13, Disc 1. Habit 1. Get a haircut. First impressions last. Page 1, Disc 1. Habit 2. Shut up. Listen and pay attention. Page 9, Disc 1. Habit 3. Look up. Attitude is everything. Page 15, Disc 1. Habit 4. Be careful. Take care of your troops. Page 23, Disc 2. Habit 5. Sharpen the sword. Take care of yourself first. Page 35, Disc 2. Habit 6. Be good. Know your stuff. Page 45, Disc 3. Habit 7. Build trust. Be trustworthy. Page 51, Disc 3. Habit 8. Hang on tight. Find an enlisted mentor. Page 59, Disc 3. Final thoughts. Page 67, Disc 3. Disclaimer. Opinions, conclusions, and recommendations expressed or implied within are solely those of the author and do not necessarily represent the views of Air University, the United States Air Force, the Department of Defense, or any other U.S. government agency. Cleared for public release, distribution unlimited. Foreword. Chief Bob Vasquez has found an innovative and effective way to share some basic principles that every new lieutenant should know on the subject of how to succeed as a leader in our great Air Force. He provides the enlisted perspective in a way that only a senior non-commissioned officer can communicate. I've known the chief for many years and have seen him succeed as an enlisted leader and as a mentor to the many officers he's served. As a member of the Air Force Academy's Center for Character Development, he mentors our future leaders on a daily basis. It is obvious that serving is his passion. I'm convinced that any lieutenant who reads this book will be better prepared to lead at every level. Ronald R. Fogelman, General, USAF, retired, Durango, Colorado, 9 March 2006. The odds are that most of us who have served lengthy careers as senior non-commissioned officers in the Air Force have sage advice to share with fledgling officers. The difference is that Chief Bob Vasquez has done it in a well-written, common-sense how-to book. Easy to read and appropriately interspersed with humorous guidance, Air Power is not just for new lieutenants, but for anyone in a position of leadership. I've known Bob for over 30 years. Not only does he talk this stuff, he practices it daily, and it works. After you read Air Power, do what he says, and you'll be an exceptional leader. Robert D. Gaylor, Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force, retired, San Antonio, Texas, 18 January 2006. About the author. Bob Vasquez is currently the course director for the freshman seminar, Vital Effective Character Through Observation and Reflection, VECTOR, offered through the U.S. Air Force Academy's Center for Character Development. He served in the Air Force for more than 30 years before retiring on 1 November 2002. Bob invested 24 of those years in Air Force bands throughout the world. He also served as commandant of the Non-Commissioned Officer Academy at March Air Force Base, California, senior enlisted advisor to the commander of the 92nd Airlift Wing at Fairchild Air Force Base, Washington, deputy director of the Family Support Center at Ramstein Air Base, Germany, and superintendent for the 86th Mission Support Group at Ramstein. A proud member of the Air Force Academy's team since 16 November 2002, Bob is also an adjunct professor at the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs. Although he is an author as well as a musician, speaker, life coach, and mentor, Bob considers his greatest accomplishments the raising of his daughters, Tessa and Elise, a granddaughter, Nieves, and growing closer to Debbie, his lovely bride of more than 28 wonderful and fulfilling years. Preface. Isn't this a great day to be an American warrior? If I had a dime for every time I've said that, I'd be driving a BMW. Wait a minute. I drive two BMWs. I've gained some notoriety from that statement, but that's not why I say it, nor why I developed it. It's a sincere statement of loyalty and dedication to a way of life I enjoyed for most of my adult days. I've written this book to share my experiences and joy with you, and to help you be your best, because I believe that if you're an effective officer leader, a.k.a. an exceptionally powerful lieutenant, you will certainly take care of a group of people I love dearly, enlisted folks. I'm not sure you got the enlisted perspective from the institution where you received your commission, but you're going to get it now, in a good way, of course. My goal is to empower you with habits that will make you an exceptionally powerful lieutenant. What I'll share with you comes from an enlisted perspective. Don't throw away what you already know about leading. Just add this material to your toolbox. But enough about you. Let's talk about me. I served in the United States Air Force for more than 30 great years. The official line is that I retired in 2002, but the term retirement carries a tinge of volunteerism. I did not volunteer to leave my service. I would have stayed another 30 years had I been afforded that opportunity. I love serving with people whose purpose lies beyond their own desires and who do everything in their power to keep our country free. I served in the rank of Chief Master Sergeant, E9, for almost 12 years, more than a third of my service time, and as such had many opportunities to mentor officers of every grade and every rank of enlisted person. I can't tell you how many lieutenants I chewed up and spit out. Okay, I never did that. But it sounded good and got your attention, right? Speaking of which, I still always stand at attention for lieutenants who have a special place in my heart because they're the first officers who lead my enlisted brethren. I'm convinced that that first leadership opportunity sets the stage for the rest of an officer's military life, eventually leading him or her to become either a good or bad senior officer. I hope that this book will help you become a good senior officer. What gives me the right to make the assertions I do in this book? As I assessed my answer to that question, I tried to remember when I started leading people. It was almost easier to remember when I didn't lead. I've led for as long as my memory will take me back. That in itself doesn't make me an authority, I know. I've also observed and studied countless leaders, taking note of what worked and what didn't work for them. I was blessed with working with both the best and the worst. I learned a great deal from both types. You may not agree with what you read here, and you're welcome to argue with me if you please. I can assure you that what you're about to read is the truth as I know it. My hope is that you'll laugh, cry, and learn as I share some basic leadership ideas with you that will make you an exceptionally powerful lieutenant. Now, go forward. Make this a great day to be an American warrior. Adelante. Bob Vasquez, Chief Master Sergeant, USAF, retired, Monument, Colorado, 1 January 2006. Acknowledgements. Everything we do in this world is touched by someone else. I'm grateful to everyone who has nurtured me and given me opportunities to excel and to fail. I learned from every experience. The following is only a partial list of those to whom I owe much. There are many more, but it would take another book just to mention them. Thanks to Dr. Russ Sojourner, Major Jeff Kozera, Colonel Tom Berry, USAF retired, Major General Gary Diluski, USAF retired, and my colleagues at the U.S. Air Force Academy's Center for Character Development, who continuously support me in making my vision a reality. Thanks to my personal life coaches, who continuously show me the way, Mr. D.J. Eagle Bear Vanis, Mr. Noah Ben Shea, and Ms. Sarah Hurd. Thanks to the officers who have mentored and inspired me through the years, General Ron Fogelman, USAF retired, Major General Gary Volger, USAF retired, and his lovely bride, Carol, Lieutenant General Stephen Lorenz, Lieutenant General Art Lichty, Colonel Denny Laydecker, Major Doug Monroe, Major Hank Emerson, USAF retired, Captain Eric Carano, and all of the lieutenants, too many to list, with whom I stood to make a positive difference. Thanks to the chiefs who made me a chief, Chief Master Sergeant John Sturley, USAF retired, Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force, CMSAF, Bob Gaylor, retired. CMSAF Dave Campanale, retired. CMSAF Paul Airy, retired. CMSAF Bud Andrews, deceased. CMSAF Sam Parrish, retired. CMSAF Jim McCoy, retired. CMSAF Jim Binnaker, retired. Chief Master Sergeant Bob Smith, USAF, retired. Chief Master Sergeant Roy Boudreau, USAF, retired. Chief Master Sergeant Ron White, USAF, retired. Chief Master Sergeant Frank Guidus, USAF, retired. Chief Master Sergeant Mac McVicker, USAF, deceased. Chief Master Sergeant George Moriarty, USAF, retired. And Chief Master Sergeant Jose Tavares, USAF, retired. Thanks to all the cadets who have passed through the U.S. Air Force Academy. Those I've known are the real inspiration behind this book. They are the best and brightest who endure much more than I ever could so that they can fulfill their dreams of being warriors and defenders of our way of life and freedom. Thanks to Mom, Dad, T.O. Ruley, Mama Joyce, and my siblings, particularly my baby sister, Elva, for providing me the love and nurturing I needed to succeed as a warrior. Thanks to the two teachers who empowered me to grow, Mr. Bruce Firkins and Mr. Jack Hall, and to my editor at Air University Press, Dr. Marvin Bassett, who helped make sense of what I've written. Special thanks to Debbie, my lovely bride of 28 wonderful and fulfilling years, who keeps me on the right track, who has endured all of the assignments, TDYs, and late-night calls, and who gave me the greatest gift of all, my daughters, Tessa and Elise. Thanks to Nieves, my grandbaby, who gives me different eyes with which to see this wonderful world. Lastly and mostly, I thank my God at least twice a day for the blessings I receive every day. I'll never be worthy, but I accept them as grace. Introduction. You may be wondering how I chose the title of this book, Air Power, 8 Basic Habits of Exceptionally Powerful Lieutenants. Or you may not. Here's the explanation, anyway. I'll break it down one word at a time because I believe words are very powerful. It may help if you understand the words in the title because they bind the text into my purpose for sharing these thoughts with you, to help you become an exceptionally powerful lieutenant. A lieutenant is a leader, or is expected to be one, so please forgive me if I use those terms interchangeably. By the way, although the title may sound similar to others you may have read, the content is not. Believe me. The concept of air power is simple. An heir is a successor. If you break that word apart, you're left with success and or. Success or the alternative to success is failure. What you'll find in this book deals with success, not failure. Better yet, it's about enabling people to succeed. Power is the capacity to act effectively. Who has power? You do. I do. We all do. Real power is produced when we share what we have. In this book, I share all that I can with you that will enable you to succeed. We'll achieve real success when you take what I give you and what you develop on your own and then share it with others. The only way to get is to give. The best way to succeed is to help others succeed. Pass on all you can, and you too will develop air power. Why the number 8? My daughters used to watch a television program called Schoolhouse Rock. They loved that show. Okay, I loved that show, so they had to watch it. One of the show's songs, about the figure 8, caught my attention. One of the lyrics went, "Figure 8 as double 4. That's a circle that turns round upon itself." What's that got to do with leadership? Well, Chief Master Sergeant Gene Gardner, USAF retired, an old friend of mine, once told me that as leaders, we can do one of two things. We can do something to our people, or we can do something for our people. Now, as we get to know each other through this book, you'll find that I enjoy playing with words, so let me take his statement and make it more powerful. Isn't for, F-O-R, F-O-U-R, twice as much as to, T-O, T-W-O? Hence, 8 will be even twice as powerful as for, F-O-U-R, F-O-R, right? If that doesn't make sense, don't worry about it. I'll probably tell you more things that don't make sense on the surface. You'll just have to trust that I know what I'm trying to tell you. You'll also find that I like circles. The figure 8, a circle that turns round upon itself, is powerful too. You'll find at the end of this book that these concepts all turn round upon themselves. They're simple but important, and they all almost blend into each other. Leadership is a cycle that continues indefinitely. More on that later. I think that by employing 8 important leadership lessons, you will become an exceptional leader. The term basic is, well, basic. I studied with a professor who told me that life is simple once you understand its complexities. I told you that my purpose is to help you become an exceptionally powerful lieutenant. An important question is, who will you lead? Yourself and other people. Pretty simple, don't you think? Maybe not. People are complex entities. You're a complex being, aren't you? We even take pride in that sometimes. Leadership, I believe, is much simpler than we often think. The problem, really, is that we don't think, neither very much nor very often. When we do, it's not always about what we should be thinking about. As you read this book's 8 admonishments, you may say, "Hey, I knew that." That's okay. I don't profess to be a prophet. I'm just trying to guide you to think about what will help you become an exceptionally powerful lieutenant. You already know this stuff. You just haven't thought of it lately. See how basic that is? Or is it too complex? I believe Aristotle said, "We are what we repeatedly do." Dr. Stephen Covey, author of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Yeah, it sounds like the title of this book. But don't forget, I told you the content is different, so read on. Says that we first build our habits, and then our habits build us. There's much truth to what both these sages say. The more we do something, the better we become at doing it. That TV ad that says, "Just do it," doesn't necessarily have any thought behind it. I'm hoping that this book will first make you think about why you should do it before you do it. And then you can do it right, and you can do it now. I'll even tell you what it is. Habits, like words, are very powerful in that eventually you won't even think about what you're doing. You'll make things happen almost naturally, habitually. In the paragraph that follows, I explain what powerful means. But before I get to that, let me ask you, are you the type of person who just wants to make the grade? Are you comfortable simply meeting the standard? Or are you willing to do what it takes to achieve your personal best in all you do? Do you see yourself setting the standard for excellence? If you answered yes to the first two questions, then go read a Marvel comic book. If you answered yes to the second two, then read on. You're going to be a great leader, an exceptional leader. You see, to lead the enlisted folks we recruit these days, you're going to have to be way above ordinary. Just meeting the standard will not be good enough. Your troops won't follow you unless they believe you're better than they are. The 8 habits I'm about to share with you will set you above everyone else. By living them, you will be, I guarantee, not only powerful, but exceptionally powerful. We use the term powerful fairly regularly. Do you know what it means? I'm going to bet that you've never even thought about what it means. Let me help you out. Powerful means full of power. Basically, that's what it means, doesn't it? One dictionary defines full as containing all that is normal or possible. Power, it says, is the ability or capacity to perform or act effectively. According to Covey, effectiveness is getting what you want again and again and again. You are full of power. You have within you all of the capacity you need to inspire your troops to follow you. We'll dismiss the word normal in the definition of full because you're not willing to settle for normal. You'll set a higher standard for those you lead because you have the desire and the will to do it. This book's 8 lessons are basic to powerful leadership. If you do them and make them habits, you will get what you want, the respect and loyalty of your enlisted troops, over and over again. Know this, power is not control. The only person you may control is you, and good luck with that. Real power lies in knowing what the people you lead need and want, and providing it to them so that you can all grow together. The lessons from this book will empower you to do that. If you develop these 8 habits, I assure you that you will succeed as a leader, particularly a leader of enlisted people. The enlisted men and women you lead will follow you and nurture you. If you haven't heard this next statement already, you will soon. The enlisted corps is the backbone of our military forces. Enlisted folks have a different function than officers, but they have the same value. Leaders must realize that they cannot do everything, and in truth, can do nothing without the support of their enlisted people. Lieutenants lead enlisted people, not officers. An effective lieutenant does the 8 things I'm about to share with you. Read this book. Learn what it says. Do it on a daily basis. and enjoy the ride. Oh, you're thinking I left out an explanation of the last word of the title, lieutenants. Believe it or not, that was intentional. Up until the day you walk into your first or new assignment, everyone will have a vision of what a lieutenant is. That vision is not necessarily positive. My hope is that, having read this book and having made a commitment to follow its tenets, you will redefine what people think a lieutenant is and can be. You will be so good that when you leave your unit, people will say, "That was one exceptionally powerful lieutenant." Words of wisdom. The secret of your future is hidden in your daily routine. Mike Murdoch. A lie has speed, but truth has endurance. Edgar J. Mone. What we have done for ourselves alone dies with us. What we have done for others and the world remains and is immortal. Albert Pike. Don't be the best in the world. Be the best for the world. DeWitt Jones. Power is the ability to do good things for others. Brooke Astor. The most powerful weapon on earth is the human soul on fire. Field Marshal Ferdinand Foch. Rank does not confer privilege or give power. It imposes responsibility. Peter Drucker. Today is the tomorrow you looked forward to yesterday. Unknown. So you're 22 years old. You've just gotten your commission. You've arrived at your first duty station. You've met with your commander. And you're now in charge of a group of enlisted men and women, all of whom have been in service longer than you, know a whole lot more about military life than you, and are expecting more than you know. To top it all off, your first subordinate happens to be a 30-year veteran of every war you ever read about, and his rank is, yes, E9. He's not an E10 only because that rank doesn't exist. Now what do you do? Let me tell you. 1. Habit 1. Get a haircut. First impressions last. Great news, warriors, the commander says excitedly. I brought you all here today to introduce you to your new leader. You all know we've been looking forward to this for a long time. Please do all you can to make the lieutenant comfortable. This is the day you've been waiting for. After months, even years of preparation, you've finally made it. You are the leader. The commander has pumped you up. You've pumped yourself up. You're anticipating that your followers will be as excited to see you as the commander obviously is. You are ready. Oh. Wait. As you climb the steps to the podium, you get a glimpse of the crowd gathered to greet you, and you see something different than you expected. They're not happy. What can they be thinking? Oh, man, the enlisted folks are thinking. Actually, they're saying it. Another green lieutenant. Here we go again. When you reach the podium, you look out at the troops and see a change of face. You might as well be wearing a superhero outfit, because you are tight. For you older lieutenants, that means sharp. You look good. Your hair is perfectly coiffed, combed for you less worldly folks, and tapered beyond standards. Your uniform is so crisp that it snaps, crackles, and pops. Yes, I'm making reference to Rice Krispies. Your shoes are so shiny they compete with the glare from the old man's bald head. I mean, as you walk onto the stage, the theme music from Rocky starts blaring out of the intercom speakers. Okay, wake up. I was about to say that I hope your first duty day is like what I just described. The truth is that you can make it that way. It takes work, though. As I tried to emphasize in describing the word habits in this book's title, the idea is to do what's right so often that it becomes habitual. You don't even have to think about it. You just do it. Interestingly, that clause is closely related to Nike products. You may not know it, but Nike was the Greek goddess of victory. Okay, so you did know that. Hey, I'm trying to impress you here. Victory in life comes from developing good habits. Being good often begins with looking good, and your troops will expect you to look at least as good as they do. Now think a little bit. As the leader, don't you think you should look even better than the people you lead? Whatever first impression you make on your troops, whatever they think you look like the first time they meet you, will stay in their minds forever. First impressions last. One of the reasons we insist that our military members be clean-shaven, wear their uniforms properly, wear their hats outdoors, and so forth, is that it presents a professional military image. You are a professional, aren't you? You are in the military, at least for the next several years, right? Your personal appearance will set the standard for your unit. What you give, you'll get. If you look good, chances are your troops will emulate you. If you look sloppy, chances are your troops will emulate you. That's the truth. So make it a habit to look your best, not just good, every day. Be exceptional. You'll also make an impression by the language you use. The military doesn't condone the use of vulgar language. Guess who has to impose that? You. Again, you can't enforce that rule if you break it yourself. Vulgar language validates a person's ignorance and disrespect for others. The American language includes myriad terms that you can use to provide the emphasis that vulgar words do. People use offensive language because it becomes habitual. Most of the time, they don't even realize they're offending anyone, but they are, even if the offended ones don't say so. Live up to the standard of leaders and get rid of vulgarities in your speech. Think about this. Where do vulgar words come from? Vulgar minds. Get rid of vulgar thoughts, and you'll get rid of vulgar words. Don't use them. Remember, you are now a leader, a professional leader. Think like one and speak like one. Your troops will be looking out for if and how you respect them. If you want to start out on the wrong foot, call them all by their first names. If you want to impress them, call them by their ranks and last names. Remember, you're setting the standard. What may happen, depending on the professionalism of the group, is that they'll ask you to call them by their first names. You make the call. Is that a professional habit to develop? It may depend on the maturity and trust levels within the unit. Nonetheless, don't take it upon yourself to call your followers by their first names. If they give you permission to do so, consider it deeply before you do it. And never give a follower permission to call you by your first name. I've often heard people say they have different rules when they're off duty. It's okay to call each other by first name when we're having a drink, they say. More on that later. First, you're never off duty. Most importantly, if you try to be different at work and at play, you'll eventually mess up. I've been there way too often. Remember, you'll do what you practice. You'll also impress your troops, at least the professional ones, by the way you salute. I'm amazed at the different types of salutes I see officers render. Okay, often enlisted folks aren't much better. I'll admonish them in another book. Your salute sends a clear message about how much pride you take in your profession. The military profession is the only one in which people salute each other regularly. Your salute says a lot about how you view discipline. I'll tell you more about that subject in a later chapter. A shabby salute says you don't care. That's the truth. If you salute proudly, sharply, and appropriately, your troops will see that you mean business when it comes to military bearing. Oh, one more thing on saluting. Don't thank an enlisted person for saluting you. You'll never find an enlisted person thanking an officer for returning a salute.
It's a sign of mutual respect.
Leave it at that. Is it possible to make a bad first impression but repair it?
It is, but it will take much work and probably much time. You can repent and do all sorts of good things for your folks, and they may show you respect. But know this, if you ever do anything dumb, they will revert to their first impression of you.
I always knew the lieutenant was a dirtbag. I remember the first time I saw her. I knew she was bad.
That's what will go through their minds and their lips. Trust me, I've been there. Here's the lesson. Look good, speak well, be respectful, and salute sharply. Start now to develop these habits. Pay attention to whether or not you present a professional military image. Ask someone you trust, not necessarily a buddy, to help you. Make sure you look your best all the time, even off duty, because when your troops see you downtown, they will talk about you back at the shop. Help them say good things about you. If the people you hang with use vulgar language, either make them quit or find new friends. The only way to gain respect is to give it, so treat your troops with respect on and off duty. Be proud of your profession and express that fact continuously. If you need to practice your salute, stand in front of a mirror and do it, but do it right. Remember that old saying, practice makes perfect? Wrong. Practice makes permanent. If you practice doing something badly, you'll soon be doing it badly, but perfectly bad. I think you get the picture. You'll find two types of enlisted folks in your unit, those who need you to lead them, and those who can lead you. I'll tell you more about the latter in the last chapter, but consider the former now. They need you to lead them in the right direction. In the past, I would have admonished you to aim high. What the heck? Aim high. Make your standard continue to rise by raising it. Your troops will raise it by following you. General George S. Patton said, "You are always on parade." Your troops, peers, and leaders are watching you. You have the capacity to excel. Don't just do it. Do it right. Stand tall. First impressions last. War story. My troops came to me asking for help. I call them my troops, but they actually belonged to someone else several layers of leadership away from me. They didn't have a chief to go to, so they came to me. Their non-commissioned officer in charge, NCOIC, and I had this conversation. NCOIC, you have to do something, Chief.
Me, what's the problem?
NCOIC, it's the new lieutenant.
Me, what's wrong with him?
NCOIC, he's having us go through open ranks inspections. He comes around the shops with a white glove on, inspecting our tools and our areas. He expects us to wear clean uniforms every day. Since the first day he got here, he's just been a real jerk, Chief.
Me.
It sounds to me as though he's trying to raise the standard in your organization. Can you honestly say that what he's expecting you to live up to is bad for your unit?
NCOIC.
No, sir.
Me.
Maybe the problem is that your folks have become complacent, so now this new lieutenant's vision of your potential is going against that, and you're having a hard time dealing with getting back on track.
Man, I was being brilliant.
NCOIC.
Chief, would you come over and check it out for yourself?
Me. Sure.
I did go by. I met the new lieutenant. He looked terrible. Oh, he was wearing a clean uniform, but he surely had slept in it the night before.
I know. You're not supposed to starch the BDU, but you should at least iron it before you wear it. His hair was interesting. Not exactly a jerry curl, but someone must have made plenty of money selling pomade to this man. It was slick, all right, but it obviously was holding in the hair so that it didn't look as long as it was. And his language. First of all, he befriended me immediately. Now, I don't want to give you the impression that I'm a snob or that chiefs can't be friendly, but when I introduced myself as Bob Vasquez, he took it seriously. He called me Bob. Mentor that I am, I quickly straightened him out. Senior leaders often introduce themselves by name, not rank. It's a form of humility, but never take that as permission to use their first names. What was this first impression? Mine was negative, to say the least, and that's the way I saw him. Is that fair? Not necessarily, but it's true. I hate it when I'm wrong, don't you? Luckily, I was only partially wrong. I asked him about the inspections, and he explained that there was a tremendous amount of work to be done to meet safety standards, and that the shop was very disorganized. He had honorable and sincere intentions. He just hadn't read this book, so he didn't know about Habit 8. You will soon. The poor guy was trying his best. He just needed some guidance. I asked him about his language. "That's how my troops talk, Chief," he explained. You see, he may have been disheveled, but he wasn't dumb. Notice how he quickly started calling me by my real first name, Chief. I gave him the sermon on how that type of language brings down the level of professionalism within a group. He understood and apologized. He was just trying to fit in. Actually, I think he was relieved to have my support for not using vulgarities. After I gathered the NCOs, we talked about what I'd learned. They seemed to understand where the lieutenant was coming from. He'd just started on the wrong foot. Although he thought he'd impress them with his vision, making the unit better, the troops were unimpressed with their vision of him. He didn't look the part of a leader, so they didn't see him as such. Eventually, with some mentoring, that lieutenant became one of the wing's best. He took a different approach to leading that led to his troops respecting him and even following him. Was the troops' first impression still with them? Yes, but that lieutenant worked so hard to fix it that he never messed up as long as he was there. The troops never had to revert to their first impression. You may have the best of intentions. You may have the best message ever thought of. You may have the solution to all of your troops' woes, but if you don't deliver it right the first time, it will never take effect. First impressions last. Starting points. I think that the first step toward developing a good habit starts with a good question. As Paul A. Samuelson said, good questions outrank easy answers. According to Naguib Mahfouz, you can tell whether a man is clever by his answers. You can tell whether a man is wise by his questions. At the end of each habit, I provide you some questions, some starting points, that you should consider if you choose to develop the habit just discussed. I don't necessarily have the answers on specifically how you can improve, only because each situation calls for a different response. I will, however, provide you a way to reach me so that I can help you. See final thoughts. I hope these questions will point you in the right direction. Some wise guy once said something to the effect that the answers are always within the questions. Okay, maybe I just made that up. I have been called a wise guy before. Think. Question. Do. Be. How would the person I would like to be do what I am about to do? Do I look like a professional leader? Do I speak like a professional leader? Do I think like an exceptionally powerful lieutenant? Words of wisdom. Vision without action is a daydream. Action without vision is a nightmare. Japanese proverb. The game of life is the game of boomerangs. Our thoughts, deeds, and words return to us sooner or later with astounding accuracy. Florence Shin. Ordinary people believe only in the possible. Extraordinary people visualize not what is possible or probable, but rather what is impossible. And by visualizing the impossible, they begin to see it as possible. Sherry Carter Scott. Your talk talks and your walk talks, but your walk talks louder than your talk talks. John C. Maxwell. The man who radiates good cheer, who makes life happier wherever he meets it, is always a man of vision and faith. Ella Wheeler Wilcox. Leadership is the capacity to translate vision into reality. Warren Bennis. The empires of the future are empires of the mind. Winston Churchill. 2. Habit 2. Shut up. Listen and pay attention. So now you're a lieutenant, a leader of men and women. People look up to you. Okay, some people look up to you. As the leader, you and others think for some unknown reason that you possess knowledge and wisdom, so they come to you for guidance. Since you are their leader and your purpose is to help your troops out as much as you can, you're more than willing to do so when a teammate comes to you with a problem. Lieutenant, I need your help, she says. Ah, this is good, you think. She respects me enough to seek my counsel. She just started talking, and you're already thinking of something else, about how to fix her problem. Your heart is in the right place, but your brain is already wandering, searching the recesses of your mind, trying to formulate an answer. You, like most of us, are good at jumping to solutions. The problem is that you don't know what the problem is. You aren't listening. You may be hearing, and that's questionable, but you're hearing with the intent to reply. That's not listening. In enlisted professional military education, we teach the troops a three-step communication process. Tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. That process works well if you're giving a briefing or teaching a class, but no one uses it to ask for help. Normally, the first part of the conversation is either background, icebreaker, or diversion. The punchline comes at the end of the conversation. If you stop listening as soon as you assume, and you know what that does, you know the question, chances are you'll provide a perfect answer to a totally different question. What's really bad is that since you know it's the perfect answer, you'll start patting yourself on the back early in the conversation and call it a success. In the meantime, your troop is still talking. Wait a minute, you say. I'll validate that my troop understands the answer I give her and that it does answer the question. I'll do that by asking her if she understands. Think a little bit. The troop is young and inexperienced. She's less experienced than you are. She came to you because she respects you. Surely she had some trepidation, if not downright fear, mixed with awe, about coming to you in the first place. You ask her, with all sincerity, of course, "Do you understand?" What do you expect that youngster to answer? Maybe, "Nah, man, you're not even close to answering my question. Did you stop listening? Can't you do better than that?" I think not. She's going to answer whether it's true or not. "Yes, Lieutenant." As soon as she walks out the door, reality will sink in, and she'll wonder what planet you're from and why she came to see you to begin with. She'll immediately talk to her friends and pass on what happened. Word of mouth is the quickest and most effective advertising method. In about 8 minutes, everyone in the unit will know that you're not a good listener. Here's a question that will bum-fuzzle all the men reading this. Hey, I know, because I am one. What's the first step in the listening process? Nope. Try again. Men, it's shut up. Yeah, I know that hit you between the eyes. It should hit you between the ears. What's interesting is that the women get it on the first try. The truth is, we're scripted and trained to provide answers. Shut up and listen are foreign terms to us men. No kidding. Say that to a guy and he'll say, huh? But that's what you've got to do. Shut up and listen for the question. Again, it's often at the end of the dialogue. Maybe shutting down is the key. You have to shut down your own perspective to get the speaker's perspective first. Then you can use the benefit of all your wisdom to inspire the seeker to develop his or her own answer. Most people already have the answer to their problem by the time they come to see you. They just don't like the answer or want someone to validate it. The best you can do is let them choose their own solution. Often all they need is someone to listen. Do that, and the word will get out that you're exceptional. Shutting up is the first critical part of the listening process. Another is paying attention to nonverbal communication. We often say more with our bodies than we do with our words. Tone of voice will tell you a lot about how people feel and what they want to communicate. Debbie, my lovely bride of 28 wonderful and fulfilling years, has exactly 5 ways she says my name. 2 of them are good. Listen for feeling as well as content. That may take some skill, but you can develop it if you try. Take some listening courses if you can find them. Strive to listen empathetically. That means don't judge what you're hearing. Just accept it as the speaker's view. After people tell you what they want to tell you, then ask if they're looking for advice. You'll have to use your intuition here. Remember that they may say what they think you might want them to say. Listen with your eyes as well as your ears. If they say no, don't offer it. You've done your job. If they do want advice, make sure they understand that it's based on your limited experience and that the final decision is theirs alone. Keep in mind that they might say yes when you ask them if they want your advice only because they think you want to advise them. As you become a better listener, you'll develop a stronger trust. When that happens, your troops will feel better about telling you whether they truly want your advice or whether they just want you to listen. When they come for the latter, count it a success. One of the most important aspects of good listening is not interrupting. Have you ever talked with people who finish your every sentence? If they know what you're going to say, why waste your time saying it? Those folks can carry on your conversation and theirs at the same time. As difficult as it may be, don't interrupt. My lovely bride calls it interactive listening. It's become a cultural thing, I think. It's un-American not to interrupt. Let the speaker finish. Wait for that punchline. Many American Indian cultures have a really neat listening process when they're in council. They have what they call a talking stick. The person who holds it gets to talk. Those who do not hold the stick get to shut up and listen. They say nothing at all until it's their turn for the stick. My baby sister gave me one of them for Christmas. I've had to adjust the process a little, though. I smack people with it every time they start to interrupt. Hey, sometimes you do what you have to do. Okay, I don't do that, but I often consider it. The point is, don't interrupt. It's rude, and you may miss the point if you do. Shut up, shut down, listen, pay attention. Be aware that once your troops know you're a good listener, they will seek you out. Very few people know how to listen. The power in that skill is that you'll be trusted and you'll be able to help others. Listening will empower you to learn, and there is so much to learn, whether about people or the work you do. Listen and pay attention. Your troops will soon respect you for it. If you make it a habit to listen well, I guarantee you that you're on your way to becoming an exceptionally powerful lieutenant. War story. This story may seem out of context, but as you read it, you'll understand its value. Although it doesn't refer to how you deal with your troops directly, it has much to do with how we listen, what we listen for, and what effect our listening can have on others. I'm sitting at the table on a Monday morning with all of the wing's group and unit commanders as the new general asks questions, trying to understand what his wing is about. "Why is that building across the street from the security forces building green when all the others on the base are beige?" he asks. Eyes in the headlights all around. Most of the commanders are new as well, so they don't know. No one responds with a plausible answer. The meeting goes on. I think nothing of it. Later in the week, I make a point to explore the base a bit. Remembering the general's question, I go over to see that building he'd asked about. Sure enough, it's green, not beige like all the others around it. As I get closer, I notice a group of enlisted troops in front of the building. Even from a distance, I can tell they're in an animated conversation. As I walk up, I quickly get the gist of their discussion and ask the senior person what's going on. "We have to paint this building by the end of the day, Chief," the NOCIC tells me. "Why?" I ask. "It seems like the paint is still holding up." "Our commander said the general doesn't like the color, so we're going to paint it the same color as the others," he responds. Snitch that I am, I immediately go back to headquarters and talk with the general. "Sir, did you tell anyone to paint that green building across from the security forces building?" "No, Chief, I didn't." "Why do you ask?" "Because there's a group of airmen over there getting ready to do just that, and they've got plenty on their plate right now without having to be painters." Needless to say, the general gets on the horn, that's a telephone for you young folks, and stops that tasking. "So what?" you say. Here's the listening lesson. That group's commander had read into the general's question much more than was there. As the general and I talked, he made it clear that his question was a sincere and naive one. He just wondered why that building was a different color. The commander assumed, there's that word again, that the general didn't like it, and being an overachiever, as many commanders are, he was trying to please his boss. He didn't shut up or shut down. Instead, he started coming up with a solution for a problem that wasn't even a problem. Do you think that the commander's over-aggressiveness might have had an effect on the troops? A big one. They had other, much more important duties to accomplish. That commander was more intent on doing what he thought his boss wanted than considering what was right in the larger scheme of things and doing that. Listen, pay attention. Make sure you understand the message. Don't assume. It makes an ass out of you and me. You probably don't need any help doing that. Starting points. Do I really want to understand, or do I just want to impress the speaker? Do I shut down to hear the speaker's message from his or her perspective, not mine? Am I observant of body language? When should I give advice? Words of wisdom. Courage is what it takes to stand up and speak. Courage is also what it takes to sit down and listen. Winston Churchill. Generosity gives assistance rather than advice. Marquis de Vauvenargues. Hearing is one of the body's five senses, but listening is an art. Frank Tiger. He that would be a leader must be a bridge. Welsh proverb. Why is it always easier to dislike something than to understand it? Unknown. I have two ears, so I can hear both sides of any argument. Noah Ben Shea. It's not what we say that matters, it's what the other person hears. Mort Krim. The ear of the leader must ring with the voices of the people. Woodrow Wilson. 3. Habit 3. Look up. Attitude is everything.
He's got an attitude.
Have you ever said that about someone?
Has anyone ever said that about you?
Okay. If you're a she, has anyone ever said, "She's got an attitude," about you? Chances are you're nodding your head or looking to see if people are around so they don't see you acknowledging the truth. You've got an attitude.
Yes, you do, as I do. And mine is probably bigger than yours. After all, I've got more to have an attitude about.
The question is, what kind of attitude? In case I haven't said it yet, life is all about choices. You will choose and express either a positive attitude or a negative attitude. There is no in between. You have to choose, so make the right choice. What's the right choice? Imagine the following. That person comes into the unit every day with a scowl on his face. Of course, we're talking about someone else. It's more convenient that way. This particular day, the planets and stars align, showing you the answer to the most important issue you're working on at the unit. It's the one change that can make everything, and I mean everything, better for everyone.
Hoo-ah!
When implemented, this idea will produce quantum progress. You happen to work for that person, so you can hardly wait to go in to share this great thought with him. True to his normal attitude, he shoots down everything, and I mean everything you say. He doesn't even hear you out. He doesn't know habit two, before he starts ranting about how stupid an idea it is. I know that's never happened to you, but pretend it has. Now imagine going through the same scenario with a boss who has read this book and is applying its tenets. After hearing your plan completely, without interrupting, she looks you in the eye and says, "Great idea. Let's see if we can make it work." It may not work exactly as you've envisioned it, but we can tweak it along the way until it works. We'll all be better for it. Great work, Lieutenant. Thanks. Okay, now choose. With whom would you prefer to work? Do you need any hints? Probably not. Do you think that the attitude a leader expresses will affect those whom he or she leads and works with? Man, you're so smart. His or her attitude will permeate everything. Attitude is everything because it affects everything, and I mean everything. Let's see how smart you really are. Where do people's attitudes come from? A. The way they were raised. B. The responsibilities they have on their shoulders. C. Their DNA. Or D. The choices they make. You are smart, and growing smarter as you read, right? The truth is that attitude comes from the heart, works its way through the brain into the mouth, and comes out through the hands. Kind of like the leg bone is connected to the knee bone. Ask some older person to share that song with you. Your heart is where you keep your purpose. Why are you doing what you're doing? If it's for money, forget it. You'll never make it rich in the lieutenant business. If it's to support your troops and help them grow, you're on your way to becoming an exceptionally powerful lieutenant. Your most sincere intentions, however, can become misguided if you don't think about how to make them real to others, namely those you lead. You have to think about their needs as well as how they communicate, and then try to speak at their level, which may be higher than yours. Remember the old adage, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me." Isn't that stupid? Actually, sticks and stones may break our bones, but words will break our hearts and spirits. What we do with the wrong attitude can cause even more irreversible damage.
Work on saying and doing the right thing at the right time, in the right way, for the right reason. You'd expect that from others, wouldn't you? Your attitude is yours and yours alone. Choose the right one. You will share it, like it or not. Let me use an analogy I borrowed from Major Dave Keller, a good friend and hero. What is this? Oh, right. You can't see that I'm holding an outdoor thermometer. Pretend you can see it. Again, what is this? Yes, that's right. It's a thermometer. What does a thermometer do? Okay, yes. It assesses the environment, doesn't it? You were pretty close. A thermometer tells you whether it's hot or cold or how hot or cold it is, right? It assesses the environment. Now, what is this? Oh, sorry. Pretend you see the thermostat I'm holding. Yes, that's right. It's a thermostat. Now, what does it do? It controls the environment. Hoo-ah! You're right on. Okay, don't get too technical. Just go with me on this. Some of you are too smart. Now, here's a choice question. Would you prefer to be a thermometer, an instrument that assesses the environment, one that goes around telling everyone when life stinks? Or would you rather be a thermostat, controlling those external things that bombard you and can influence you? Remember the two scenarios at the beginning of this lesson? Which of those two bosses was a thermometer? Which was a thermostat? Which are you? Yeah, I know. Some of you are saying that's a faulty analogy. Blame Major Keller. He's the one who showed it to me. Okay, I'm just kidding. My attitude started showing. Don't blame anyone. Here's the deal. Although a thermometer doesn't always say it stinks, it always takes its attitude from external sources. The thermostat controls those sources. You may think like Geraldine Jones, Flip Wilson's character, that the devil made me do it. Okay, find that older person who helped you with the Kneebone song and ask her to tell you who Flip Wilson is. Your attitude comes from you. You may let external events influence it, but you will always have to make the choice. You choose your attitude and then share it with everyone around you. The sharing part is not a choice. You will share it with everyone around you because attitude is contagious. It affects everyone you touch. It even affects morale. Let me talk about morale for a minute. We often think of morale in terms of the troops being happy. The troops are never happy. Okay, that's not true. Sometimes they are. They're happy when they have good leaders to follow. Being happy is not necessarily what morale is about, though. It's about attitude. I've been in places like Bosnia, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia where the troops weren't happy, but morale was high. I remember being in the mud, literally, in Bosnia, working alongside soldiers who put their lives on the line every day. They certainly weren't happy, but morale was high due to their attitudes, which were positive because they realized that what they were doing had meaning. They had to do their jobs because their buddies' lives depended on it. They had a sense of purpose and mission. They refused to let external things keep them from performing their duties. They were thermostats. Every time I think of those men and women, my heart swells with pride. They were, and still are, I'm sure, warriors of honor. A big hoo-ah to each of them. Morale has to do with attitude. A positive attitude, especially from leaders, will filter through a unit and create high morale. It always has. It always will. Earlier, I referred to an idea that would produce quantum progress. Chances are you understood that to mean huge progress, which is how most of us perceive the term quantum. The dictionary, however, defines it in terms of smallest, not largest. I used that term intentionally. Oftentimes, the actions, the behaviors that have the greatest impact are the smallest and easiest to generate. That small thing you do creates big results, and those big results create small, high-impact behaviors. And then the cycle starts all over again in a circle. Think about this. What very small, inexpensive act could you do daily that would produce a huge positive impact on your troops? Something you can do every day with almost no effort, but will make you a much stronger leader. An action or behavior that will create a positive attitude because it comes from a positive attitude. I won't lead you on too long. This is not American Idol. Simply saying good morning to your troops, and meaning it, of course, will reap huge benefits. I'll explain why in a second. What would that cost you? How much effort would it really take? Very little. What effect would it have on your troops? A quantum effect. Quantum in the sense that such a small investment can affect everyone in the unit and beyond. I'm beginning to sound like Buzz Lightyear in Toy Story 2, aren't I? You may need a younger person to help you with that movie. It's the little things you do that express your attitude. Here's why those small acts produce such large benefits. Everyone wants to feel valued, even lieutenants. When you acknowledge a person's presence, or is it presence? P-R-E-S-E-N-T-S. You're telling that person you care. The next habit focuses on caring, so I won't elaborate here. Every person in our military forces is valuable. Exceptionally powerful lieutenants will ensure that all of their troops know that they're valued every day. Wishing your troops a good morning and acknowledging their presence is a very small price to pay for the return you'll get. Add a smile, and they will say great things about you. In fact, a sincere smile and respectful greetings will say much more about your attitude than all the speeches you can ever deliver. For those of you who work different shifts, you'll have to say the appropriate words, but I think you catch my drift, don't you? End of Disc 1. This book is continued on Disc 2.